when you need to talk technology. No one gets you more gigs in your hard drive than Adam. It's time for Adam the Computer Guy with Adam Lepp.
And a very good Thursday morning to you, April 18th. April in its second half. I mowed the lawn for the first time yesterday, and I must say everything is greening up and looking very spring-like. But no matter what season it is, talking today's top technology topics is always fun and fruitful and fantastic, if I should say so myself. We'll tickle a few brain cells, maybe invite some controversy, invite some dialogue. Lots of things going on with Apple, going to introduce their new mobile and desktop operating systems, and we'll give you a preview of what to expect. Some copyright legislation that's maybe going to affect the European Union in a big way. That'll certainly revolutionize how content is shared. Also talk about some improvements going on at Snapchat. Good stuff coming up for you. So yeah, get your favorite warm or cold beverage. Sit back in the easy chair, or if you're driving, well, please drive safely. But this show is good to listen to, as it certainly stimulates brain cells while you go about your daily routine. We thank you very much, as always, for listening. Again, we get together every Tuesday and Thursday between about 2:13 p.m. and 3 Eastern Time, right here on The Talking Place. And you can always visit my website. Find out more about me, pctech.biz or adamthecomputerguy.com. Two websites for your pleasure, edutainment, and other advantages. Last but not least, if you listen to the station on a mobile device, as I often do, be sure to download and use the TuneIn app. Search for WWGH in Marion or WWGH 107.1 after you install the TuneIn app, which is free on a Apple mobile or Android device. You can actually use it on a desktop computer also, so it's quite flexible and versatile. Again, make our station, WWGH 107.1 in Marion, a favorite. And then whenever you want to listen, it'll be there as your favorite station for online enjoyment. This show, Scott Spears, Charlie Evers, Nate Redmond, all of our great hosts and hostesses that love to disseminate information and invite dialogue. Here on The Talking Place, WWGH. Are you a user of Snapchat? I'm not really a big fan, as I think there are other products that are better. Obviously, Facebook chat or the old-fashioned texting do the trick for me. A lot of people like the Snapchat filters, where it makes you look like a dog, tongue sticking out the ears, and who knows whatever else. And, you know, children of all ages must play, so it's cool. But I think it can get a little bit annoying. One thing about, again, as I mentioned, Snapchat has a lot of competitors. And so how do they stand out? How do they remain viable in this competitive world of online chat, other things that you do with your smartphone or your computer? A new software development kit for Stories is a new feature, an augmented reality feature that Snapchat has been introducing. They've recently had their first developers conference. They also have a new games platform. So all kinds of augmented reality features over at Snapchat to make them stand out from the rest and not just be a place where you can talk and then have your message disappear in time. Show photos where, again, you have a tongue like a dog and ears like a dog and who knows whatever else. Other things that this augmented reality interface with Snapchat might do: identifying songs through Shazam, buying what the camera sees through Amazon, effects for monuments, pets, and people. As if there weren't enough effects, they're going to add more. Solving math problems by pointing the app's camera at them. Don't need to type it in, just point it at what you want to solve, and voila, gives you an answer. Snap, and the company behind Snapchat, also introduced SnapKit at this first developers conference they recently held. The software development kit, called an SDK, allows Snapchat Stories to be embedded in other apps. For example, another group chatting app, and I haven't even heard of this one. It's called House Party. You know, I can't keep track of all these chat apps, so this is a new one on me. Anyway, this House Party chat app, stories about what friends are doing outside the chat can be seen on a Snapchat Stories carousel. Say, it gets complicated. I think just calling someone on the phone is starting to sound a lot easier. Anyway, in Tinder, certainly heard of that one, stories can be displayed beside photos to boost appeal. Now, the new software development kit takes Snapchat from being a camera app to being a camera platform. Snap Games has also made its debut at the recently held Partner Summit over at Snapchat. The games can be played with friends instantly from the Snapchat's chat bar. Again, to compete, obviously, with standalone games, I would say casinos, online casinos, and, of course, Facebook games. They want to get in on this very popular thing that people do. So with the Snapchat games, players can see whom they're playing with, send the people chat messages, or talk to them live. 6 titles initially will be launched with Snap Games. Bitmoji Party, Zombie Rescue Squad, and Snake Squad, and 3 others. And Snake Squad, that sounds interesting. Snap also announced the addition of more shows to its originals offering. Now, launched back in 2018, the first batch of original video shows from Snapchat included scripted programs from Boonam Murray and Carter Harris. Carter Harris is a writer for Friday Night Lights, and Boonam Murray, they are famous for the show that I really have no interest in, but I know is kind of a sensation, Keeping Up with the Kardashians. Other programs include a supernatural soap opera, Dead Girls Detective Agency, a college comedy, co-ed, and a docu-series about Danielle Brigoli, the Cash Me Outside girl. New shows in Snap's original lineup include Can't Talk Now from New Form, a teen soap opera, which takes place inside the phones of a few high school freshmen, BFFs, best friends forever. Well, that sounds interesting. Another one, Denton's Death Date from Insurrection Media. A high school junior's death date is only a few weeks away. In Commanders, 2 high school outcasts discover a retro computer with a mysterious code that can alter real life. That sounds like my kind of show. And geeks making good. Doing things that take full use of their brain power, but could also be damaging. As to the suspense, I guess. In Stranded, 2 paranormal investigators go off the grid into a cursed Pennsylvania town. So some interesting shows coming up on Snapchat. I think this will invigorate the company and spark interest, including people like myself, who, again, really are not big Snapchat users. I have an account, but I'm not, again, not really a big user. I think this will make it more interesting. It's certainly creative. The new additions to Snapchat aim to increase engagement. According to Kevin Cruel from Turios Research in San Jose, California, he said with user growth stalled, it needs something new and fun to get people to use it more and to appeal to a wider audience. The company needs to keep changing and improving the user experience in creative and fun ways, or it will be passed by Instagram. One new Snapchat edition in particular, the opening up of the software to third-party developers through SnapKit, could be critical to the company's future success. Jack Kent from IHS Market, based in London, said Snap has seen some of its most notable features adopted by competing apps that can boast larger audiences, which can limit its ability to differentiate and also limits its ability to add content and services from third parties, providing a wider and more open platform to third-party content and services is crucial for Snap to develop its proposition. However, Snap will need to prove it can drive monetization for its content partners to succeed in the future. In adopting these moves, Snap is emulating the long-established strategy for major Asian messaging apps like WeChat, Kakao, and Line. So far, apps from the Western world have been more limited in their platform strategies. Facebook Messenger, we use that all the time, it's added many features, including gaming. But these apps have had a rather limited impact so far. Snap's new game offering could also benefit the app. Louise Shorthouse, also from IHS Market, said, "A well-done, seamlessly integrated gaming service could help Snapchat stand out from the crowd. Access will be intuitive for established users, and it'll encourage them to remain within the Snapchat ecosystem for all things social. Games may represent an opportunity for a wider reach, depending on their success. But this is less about attracting new users and more about engaging the current audience." In the past, Snap innovations have been snapped up by competitors, pun intended, mostly by Instagram, again, which is owned by Facebook. Ross Rubin from Reticle Research in New York City said, "It's been a game of anything you can do, I can do better, because Instagram has seen a massive user base. Perhaps Snap has an opportunity now because there is so much scrutiny on Facebook and, by extension, Instagram." He said they can position themselves as a more secure, more respectful of privacy alternative to Facebook. Apple has been playing that card very well versus Google, but if Facebook keeps its priorities together, it's going to be tough because Facebook is doing even more to integrate messaging among its three big platforms. Again, Facebook, Instagram, and one I don't use, WhatsApp. So again, Facebook, the king of online messaging and social media, but other players like Snap looking to make a bigger impact. Adam Lepp here on The Talking Place, making an impact on brain cell stimulation, as we like to do. WWGH Radio, 107.1 FM in Marion, and broadcasting online by, as I say, the magic and power and overall wonderfulness of the internet, WWGH1071.com. You can oftentimes hear news about all these smart and rich and creative people over at Apple in the interestingly titled city of Cupertino, California. We often cover what's going on there on this show, and I think we'll cover something right now. They have Apple has a worldwide developers conference coming up in June. I don't plan on attending. That is my birthday month, but probably a little bit too cerebral for me. But for all the smart people going, I think it'll certainly accomplish quite a bit. So, of course, the rumor mill is starting, with that going to occur in just a few weeks. What's going to happen? The next generation of desktop and multiple mobile operating systems over at Apple. Some things that have been bantered about include Mac OS support for the iPad as an auxiliary display, and iOS, the mobile operating system, support for multiple windows within apps. That sounds like fun. There are many third-party products on the market to add an iPad as a second display for a Mac, but the feature will become native to Apple's desktops and laptops with the next version of Mac OS. According to the experts, people covering this stuff, next version of Mac OS will be version 10.15. The feature, referred to internally as Sidecar, reportedly can be accessed by hovering a Macintosh's cursor over the green button to maximize a window in the Macintosh operating system. Hovering will reveal a menu with options for making the window full screen, for tiling it, or moving it to an external display or an iPad, where it will appear in full screen mode. That sounds quite fun. Lauren Guenvor, I believe that's the pronunciation. She is a senior research analyst at IDC. We've quoted her before, quite an expert in this stuff, and interesting name also. She said it's a smart idea. Her company IDC is in the Boston area, Framingham, Massachusetts. She said, "For those of us who travel, it's quite annoying to have just one small screen. Even with a 13-inch iPad, it's hard to achieve total productivity with that machine. While the iPad is connected to a Mac, Apple Pencil can be used with the tablet, making the iPad a stand-in for a tablet accessory. So for the mobile operating system, for you folks using the iPhone, the iPad, and all those fancy-dancy gadgetries, is that a word, gadgetries? Well, stuff. It'll be iOS 13. Lucky 13 will have a new bunch of features, according to the experts and all those people that know more than I do. So what's going to happen with this new mobile operating system from Apple, iOS 13? Well, iPad applications will be able to function in multiple windows, open simultaneously. Each window can contain what's called sheets. At first, the sheets are attached to a portion of the screen, but they can be detached with a drag gesture and moved around the screen like cards. Now, drag gesture, not to be confused with RuPaul's Drag Race, of course. That's a different kind of drag. This is a drag gesture. So, RuPaul, if you're listening, keep in mind it's not the same kind, but just a little side note there. Anyway, they also can be dragged onto each other to form a deck. To get rid of a card, the user can virtually fling it away. That sounds like fun. I guess that's how they get you to pay $1,000 for these devices. They have all these catchphrases and fancy features that they add. Cool stuff. Also, the iPad and iPhone will get a dark mode, which already is supported by the Macintosh operating system, the desktop, the Mac OS. The system-wide dark mode can be enabled through the iOS settings. It includes a high contrast option. A new undo and redo gesture will be part of the new iOS repertoire. When a user enters text on the iPad, a three-finger tap on the keyboard area will activate the feature. Moving left or right will undo and redo actions interactively. The first time a keyboard is displayed after installing the new version of iOS, a tutorial will appear explaining the new feature, which is probably a good idea given the recent track record of iOS. The expert there, Lauren Guenvoor, whose name I'm probably mispronouncing, said, "One of the complaints about iOS 12 was, while it had a lot of new features, they weren't always the most intuitive. Yeah, what good is it if you can't figure it out? Mail will also get better." Mail, of course, being kind of the original purpose of the internet and still being used. You know, instant messaging, Snapchat, Instagram, Facebook messaging. We still have mail, folks. We always will have electronic mail. In fact, I think it's getting more important as a standby. But there are issues, if you know, with the mail app in the iOS. Not always intuitive, and it's quirky. And I know from helping my own customers, when you try to set up an email account, it never seems to do what it's supposed to the first time. And then you have to wait and try it again. And after you cross your fingers and maybe utter a couple swear words, it eventually works. So Mac is reportedly going to improve the mail app in the new iOS 13, the new mobile operating system. Things that will occur, you'll be able to organize messages into categories, like what you would do on your computer. Purchases, travel, marketing, etc. They're searchable. A read later bin will also be available. I can put my bills there. Anything I don't really want to read right now. Another gesture has been added to the operating system. So multiple items can be selected in tables or collections. Using multiple fingers, the items in the list or collection can be selected easily. Collaboration and third-party document-based apps may be introduced in the new iOS. In addition, Safari for iOS 13, the web browser, has been tweaked so that on the iPad, it automatically will ask for the desktop version of websites. Some websites, most notably YouTube, will send an iPhone version of a site to an iPad, even though the tablet can handle a desktop rendering of a site. As depends on the size of the iPad, but it can be closer to the size of your laptop or a small desktop monitor than a phone. And there are better features, and especially with videos, on a desktop version. So that sounds like a pretty good idea. Some other new features are a redesigned Reminders app, addition of a font management panel to add fonts to a device, a new high volume, HUD, better Hey Siri rejection, so it better distinguishes between speech and noise. That's the old joke that you say something which sounds like Hey Siri, but you really are talking to a person or maybe a different device, who knows. So that's all good stuff. Reported new features of the new mobile Apple operating system, iOS 13, aim to make the iPad a better tablet, as well as a better computer, said Patrick Moorhead from More Insights and Strategy, technology analyst and advisory firm in the capital city of Texas in Austin. He said they indicate to me that Apple is wanting to make the iPad more of a personal computer. The new features will appeal to anyone who values improving his or her productivity. At least for the iPad Pro, Apple is always going to push the productivity story. Now, one of the reasons Apple introduced the iPad Air, which has a larger screen than the basic iPad and a faster processor, was to encourage movement to its higher-end tablets. And that's according to Lauren Guinevere, the expert we quoted earlier, with a name that I'm probably messing up. She said by placing something between the iPad Pro and an iPad, it has something that's for content consumption but can also be seen as a productive machine. As powerful as Apple has made its Pro version of the iPad, though, for many people it still seems to lack the productivity allure of a laptop. Ms. Guinevere said, "What really hampers the iPad Pro, although they added a host of features with iOS 12, was that iOS is still a very mobile operating system for some folks. Even though it's a powerful device, iOS 12 just doesn't provide the support needed for it to be a full productivity machine." She said one of the reasons Microsoft's Surface Pro tablet has a productivity edge over the iPad Pro is Windows. Where the Surface Pro shines is Windows 10, which is a fully fledged operating system with a desktop. And I would agree. I mean, each device has good and bad points, and those are things that come to mind. And again, no argument here from yours truly. Apple provides a better tablet experience, but Microsoft delivers better productivity, and neither of them have figured out how to do that both well. One is always going to be more of a tablet. One is always going to be more of a computer. For Apple, the answer to the productivity challenge may lie in Mac OS, the desktop operating system. She said, "I think they're going to continue to tweak iOS and add Mac operating system features to it." That is desktop features. If you compare the iPad Pro to some of the laptops that Apple released in 2018, the iPad Pro was far more powerful, so it makes sense to focus on iOS and bring in useful features from macOS. So interesting news there from all those smart people at Apple, improving the macOS desktop operating system and the iOS operating system for the mobile devices. Adam Lepp here, the computer guy. We get together every Tuesday and Thursday between about 13 after 2 p.m. Eastern Time and 3 to talk today's top and trendy technology topics. So with Apple's Developers Conference coming up in June, what else is going on in the world of Apple? They plan to introduce a number of new products in the next 2 years, which will have a new display technology. And that comes to Master Apple Watcher, Ming-Chi Kuo of TF International Securities. And Ming-Chi Kuo, I'm not sure yet if this person is male or female, so I will let you know when I find out. I don't like to give the wrong gender of people. So we'll save that and be in suspense when I do find that out. But whichever it is, Ming-Chi Kuo is a smart and insightful person whose opinions are certainly valuable. So predictions from this person, which were reported back in April, earlier in April, Apple will use new mini LED technology in three new products. A 31.6-inch monitor, launching in the second or third quarter. A new iPad with a 10 or 12-inch screen in late 2021 or 2020. And a new MacBook with a 15 or 17-inch screen. And that'll be in the first half of 2021. So good things to look forward to. So what exactly is this mini LED technology? Sounds fun. It offers improvements over traditional LED displays. That's according to LED Inside, an online publication of TrendForce, a tech company, tech market intelligence company in Taiwan. Mini LED screens have better color rendering performance and enable more high dynamic range categories. Mini LED products are as thin as those using the OLED technology, so they consume less power than traditional LED screens, and they cost 70 to 80% less to produce than OLED displays, although their performance is similar. They also don't have the burn-in problems of OLEDs, where you sometimes see a shadow of what you were looking at before on the screen. And they also last longer. So certainly advantages of this mini LED technology. With their wide color gamut and high contrast features, the mini LED displays could give Apple's laptops and displays an edge over competitors. The first of the expected mini LED products, which is the 6K 31.6-inch monitor, could appear as early as late spring in 2019, but more likely closer to September. The monitor will be an all-new design, so it's likely to have thinner bezels and a sleeker appearance than its predecessor, which is the cinema display. The backlight unit used in the new monitor will be made of some 500 LED chips of about 600 microns. That's packing a lot of power in a small package. Technically, a little bigger than a standard mini LED, which are 100 microns, but the new demand for the so-called quasi-mini LEDs is expected to give the supply chain an opportunity to improve production costs and yields. The monitor will be a very high-end product. Of course, you know what that means. High price tag and not a high-volume item. The new monitor, according to Ashraf Ayesa, who writes for The Motley Crue, that's a band. Anyway, the new monitor will help Apple build street credit with the professional content creation community. It'll not only signal that the company is in tune with professionals' needs, but also will provide Mac Pro buyers with an optimal screen for their system. It's unlikely that the resulting display sales will have much of an immediate effect on Apple's business, but building credibility in the pro market ultimately could pay future dividends from increased Mac revenue and market share. 10,000 mini LEDs will be needed for the new 10 or 12-inch iPad, which will use true mini LED chips at densities 20 to 25 times greater than those used in the 31.6-inch monitor. And packing a lot of power there in a small package, and that means a high price tag, but some high-quality devices. The chips will be produced by Epistar, while the panels for the units will come from LG Display and the backlight units from Radiant Optoelectronics. All three companies will form the supply chain for the MacBooks with the mini LED. So if Mr. Kuo's prediction is correct, and it sounds like he knows what he's talking about, then a 15 or 17-inch MacBook will be breaking with the predecessors of those devices. Now, MacBooks have been positioned between the entry-level MacBook Air and the high-performance MacBook Pro line. They've had 12-inch displays, while a 15 or 17-inch screen size has been reserved for the Pro models. However, there may have been a translation error in the report. Mr. Kuo referred to 15 and 17-inch MacBook Pros, not 15 and 17-inch MacBooks, according to Apple Insider. So I think the suspense will loom. Not bad to get surprised. You never quite know. And Apple certainly has been known to change things while they were still in progress and process, or they had a launch date for an item. So just adds to the fun, as long as the price isn't too painful. Now, some mini LED displays have already started to appear in public. Charles King from Hayward, California, from Pund It. We've quoted him regularly. Yeah, that guy knows anything and everything about technology. He said at the Consumer Electronics Show, ASUS demonstrated a mini LED display in a product aimed at artists and other creative professionals. Embracing mini LED technology could give Apple an effective way to compete against 8K and other high-resolution displays. Charles King added that by entering the market early with these mini LED displays, Apple could help drive mini LED innovation. And they tend to be the leader. They introduce stuff and other companies follow. They build on it. Well, many times they're kind of jealous. Anyway, by entering the market early, Apple could help drive mini LED innovation and garner much of the capacity for itself. That would fit in with Apple's history of preferring exclusive or proprietary technologies. Now, Mr. Kuo didn't mention iPhones in his research note, but Charles King sees an opportunity for Apple's there also. We talked about the operating systems earlier in this segment, and, well, now we have the displays. Mini LED is reportedly more energy efficient than other technologies, so mobile devices, like iPhones, could benefit. Better battery life. Who wouldn't want that? The technology could benefit Apple in another way. If Apple's mini LED partners can provide components that are both unique and used largely or entirely by the company, they could also help its products stand out from the crowd. While the upcoming crop of products with mini LED displays could give Apple a sales boost, it remains to be seen if they can offset a shrinking iPhone market. Another expert we quote often, and he's from Bend, Oregon, Rob Enderle, said, "Price remains the biggest problem for iPhone sales, and these displays are more expensive and will likely be used as an excuse to again raise prices. Margins are Apple's sustaining problem, and these displays don't address that, so they may drive a faster replacement cycle. But the trend of a shrinking installed base is likely to continue. Moreover, mini LED may be a short-lived technology, according to LED Inside. Mini LED is a transitional technology between LED and micro LED. So, the plot thickens. Micro LED has the advantages of OLED, like we talked about, with the added plus of not needing backlighting. The mini LED market is promising in the next 2 or 3 years, but micro LED will become a superstar in the future. So it gets even more fun, you know, 2 to 3 years. All the stuff can change and get better. And I think I'll look forward to that. Let's hope the price tag isn't too painful. Adam Lepp here, the computer guy. Interesting stuff going on in Apple. I tell you, I just going over this stuff and talking about it, I think I get a few brain cells tickled enough that they add to the size of my overall knowledge spectrum. Does that make any sense? Well, I think it does. And, you know, this show is geeky, it's cerebral, and we learn something and we sometimes invite conversation. Is it worth paying for this new technology? Will it improve the battery life? Or should you go ahead and keep using a competing product? You know, I'm more of an Android guy myself, but I tell you, some of this Apple stuff is cool, and I'm more than willing to try it, assuming the price isn't too bad. WWGH Radio, the talking place. We've talked often about violations by internet companies in the European Union, the GDPR, and privacy violations, copyright violations, and other things, and internet being free speech at work, but sometimes people and companies get carried away with it and do things they shouldn't do, and they may find a pain in the pocketbook for those violations. A copyright directive that some fear could break the internet cleared the final hurdle in the European Union. The Council of the European Union approved the directive. So what does it do? It makes platforms for user-uploaded content, including the two biggies, Google and Facebook, legally liable for violating the rights of copyright holders. It requires them to obtain the permission of the holders before posting content to their sites. This could get very messy and very expensive for those who violate it. If they don't have the rights to a piece of content, the directive requires the platform to make its best efforts to obtain an authorization to ensure the availability of unauthorized content. They also must act expeditiously to remove any unauthorized content brought to their attention and prevent future uploads of that content. The directive requires that copyright holders be compensated for the display of excerpts of their works, or even links to them, on a website. European Commission President Jean-Claude Juncker said, "With today's agreement, we are making copyright rules fit for the digital age. Europe will now have clear rules that guarantee fair remuneration for creators, strong rights for users, and responsibility for platforms. When it comes to completing Europe's digital single market, the copyright reform is the missing piece of the puzzle." Now, this directive undermines the legality of the tools and sites that Europeans use every day to share thoughts, ideas, culture, humor, and science. Pretty much anything going on in the world, you know, like we seem to do with Facebook and other social media, not to mention Google. That's according to a nonprofit tech advisory group, the Computer and Communications Industry Association, CCIA. This directive increases the incentives for platforms to over-filter and over-remove users' uploads at the expense of legitimate uploads. The so-called snippet tax created by the directive risks restricting freedom of information online. The CCIA's Europe Senior Policy Manager, Maud Sackett, said, "Despite recent improvements, the EU directive falls short of creating a balanced and modern framework for copyright. We fear it will harm online innovation and restrict online freedoms in Europe. We urge member states to thoroughly assess and try to minimize the consequences of the text when implementing it." Members of the European Union, known as member states, have an opportunity to, quote, minimize the consequences when they fashion local legislation that will use the directive as a model. They have 24 months to do that from the time the directive is published in the official journal of the European Union. Now, because it targets the major online platforms, again, the big guys like Google and Facebook, the directive will have a negative impact on the digital economy. And that's according to Eline Chavot, a senior policy analyst in the Belgium offices of the Center for Data Innovation, a think tank studying the intersection of data technology and public policy. She said the adoption of this reform reflects the unfortunate way in which policymakers tend to directly copy and paste offline world regulations to the online world, because online platforms will become liable for copyright infringement. They're going to have to negotiate rights deals or seek consent before posting content to their sites. She said that will harm online platforms' business models by forcing a licensing business model on open platforms. Companies like Facebook and Google are now able to provide free services to users because they host content that doesn't require a cumbersome web of licenses. This directive sets a precedent, introducing more complexity for the user-generated content. Will they have to strike a licensing deal with everyone uploading a recipe? It could get very hairy, very expensive, and a pain in the you-know-where, but with copyrighted content, this could be necessary. The music industry being the same way. You can't just play something on the air. You have to pay royalties. And I know from my own experience working in radio, online, and over the air, it's very different. And again, we're now looking at intellectual property type matters, content on a search engine or social media site, and think this is worth exploring. It's important to note that the European digital economy already lags, and its platforms will not be able to compete, given such rules will make it more difficult for them to grow, according to Ms. Chavot, and I do agree. They may not be able to remunerate publishers to be able to host content. Hence, this will limit their reach to a broad audience of web users. This creates legal uncertainty that will hamper innovation. Now, although this directive does not mention content filters, they hang over the measure like an unshakable regret. The directive does not explicitly call for their use, but to be able to scan content before it is uploaded to see if it's copyrighted. The use of upload filters by platforms may be inevitable, out of an abundance of caution. Platforms will want to avoid the risk of not complying and the risk of facing penalties. As a result, this could restrict users' access to content. One reason why filtering content raises the hackles of free speech groups is that even the best filters are seriously flawed. It's not a perfect system. As we know, filters never get it done completely and accurately. She said some algorithms used for these filters cannot make a distinction between perfectly legal reuse of content and actual infringements. Moreover, the compliance burden may lead companies to redirect some of their resources that could have been spent on innovation. Also, to comply with this directive, regimes will need to be created to settle ownership disputes. Those regimes could pose a nightmare scenario for legitimate rights holders who've had their rights challenged by an adversary. Cory Doctorow is a special advisor to the San Francisco-based Electronic Frontier Foundation, the EFF, an online rights advocacy group. He said even if the filters only make mistakes 1% of the time, on a half a trillion pieces of content a day, that's millions and millions of case adjudications that are going to have to be made by human beings. So when you're talking about half a trillion, 1% is a lot. He said the time to get your case reconsidered by the platform could stretch 2 months. If you're talking about something newsworthy, then it's going to show up long after anyone gives a, well, not a word I want to say on the air, but you'll probably figure it out. That's why this is catastrophic for free expression. Gus Rossi is in Washington, D.C. He is the Global Policy Director at Public Knowledge, an advocacy group in D.C. He said it remains to be seen how the individual nations in the European Union will fashion their copyright laws based on the directive. But it's likely that platforms will become more conservative in what they allow users to upload. This has a high potential of harming free speech online. The directive creates a chilling effect on internet platforms. If you're an online platform, your incentives are to diminish your risks and limit whatever your users upload. Even if you want to comply with the law, it won't be easy. You're going to have 27 or 28 different flavors of a directive that's very vague and very contentious, which means 27 or 28 countries are going to go through internal litigation to try to determine what the correct interpretation of the law is. This will eventually end up in front of the European Court of Justice. So for the next 3 or 4 years, there will be legal uncertainty. So, some copyright legislation in the works at the European Union, and I would agree, we have to strike a balance, but trying to decipher all this stuff with all this information disseminated. Again, we talked about half a trillion bits of information that may have to be under the microscope every day. It'll get messy and get expensive, but, you know, that's part of the fun of the online world. Adam Lepp here, the computer guy, having fun as always, talking about today's top and trendy technology topics on The Talking Place, WWGH Radio. And as my mama sometimes told me, time flies when you're having fun. And this would be no exception. Almost time for us to bid a fair adieu for another episode of the Adam the Computer Guy radio program. Almost 3 p.m. here in the great city of Marion, Ohio, and anywhere else in the Eastern Daylight time zone, for that matter. But don't despair. I'll be back this Monday to talk politics, history, current events, and presidential elections and all that good stuff on Mid-Morning Coffee Break, which is broadcast between about 10:13 a.m. and 11 a.m. This and every Monday here at the radio station. Dr. Ronald Feynman will probably be joining me. Always a stimulating discussion, and sometimes we agree, sometimes we don't. Just have to listen to find out. And of course, this show, all about technology, smartphones, phones that aren't quite so smart, artificial intelligence, network security, privacy violations, stuff like that. Every Tuesday and Thursday, between about 2:13 a.m. and 3, here on The Talking Place. Have a great rest of your Thursday. Easter weekend is almost upon us. If the Easter Bunny visits your house, I hope that the bunny is generous. Looks like some decent weather, springtime weather coming up. That's always a good thing. You know, April, you never quite know. Get snow flurries one day, 75 degrees the next. Just keeps you guessing. And that's part of the fun of living here in the Midwest of the great United States of America. Last but not least, if you'd ever like to send me an email, we have a private email server, and I invite you to communicate with me in that very fashion. Adam@WWGH1071.com. See you later, alligator. What you told me nearly made me lose my head. When the thought of what you told me nearly made me lose my head. But the next time that I saw her, reminded her of what she said. See you later, alligator. Wait a minute, Gator.